Welcome back to Path to Glory, the Warhammer Underworlds podcast that focuses on competitive gaming, player development, and community growth. I'm your host, Aman Kusro, and today I'm joined by my co-host, or my toothy and ferocious co-host, Zach Cachetta, aka Requisen. How's it going?
I'm doing great. I'm feeling particularly aggro today.
That's right. My, how big your, what is it, from the Riding Hood or Grandma?
Your fangs are, your claws are, something like that.
How big your claws are, how big your teeth are.
Yeah.
It's kind of what we're doing today. So, we usually have two segments that we cover, but we have a bit of a time crunch today in terms of when we can record. So, we're going to postpone the ceremony there, and instead we're going to focus on the meat of the episode, which is the Tooth and Claw deck. We're really excited to talk about it. It is a Rivals deck that comes with the Gnarlwood box set. There are 32 cards, fully playable out of the box. And we're going to go ahead and get started. But before we do that, I just want to give a quick shout out to our patrons. Thanks to everyone who supports us, helps us keep the lights on. If you're interested in supporting our content, please look us up on patreon.com/pathtoglory. And if that's not possible, we still appreciate you checking us out and being part of our community. Zach, anything that you want to add before we jump into this Rivals deck?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks to all of our patrons. It's great to have feedback. Just look forward to talking about this deck, man. I'm excited.
Okay, awesome. Well, let's jump into it here. So, one of the differences in the way that Gnarlwood has been packaged in terms of other warbands, as we mentioned earlier, is that the universal cards that come in the Gnarlwood box set are fully functional Rivals decks. So what does that mean? Well, it means that if you want to play the Rivals format, you can just pick one of these decks and then pick a warband and then play. If you want to play Nemesis, you can pick your faction deck and then you can take this deck and then combine the cards between the two to have a very light deck building experience, one that is beginner friendly, but one that still offers enough depth and thought so that you can compete at an intermediate level, which is designed as Nemesis. But if you're a hardcore championship player or a veteran of the game who's used to being able to pick from any card pool, any card set, and build your deck, you can still pick and choose your favorites from Tooth and Claw that align with what your strategies are and play your game. Anything you want to add there, Zach?
I think this is just, you hit like what this is. I think this is great for new players. You can kind of pick up and run with it. There's no complex deck building for new people. I think it's going to be great for Rivals. We'll see the synergies and kind of the design of this deck in a little bit. I think it's a home run just making these Rivals decks in general from Games Workshop. I like it.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you're going to see is that compared to previous Rivals decks, this deck is actually has a lot more synergy than the ones that we've seen in the past. There are combined rules and mechanics that really allow the deck to flourish and feel some sort of cohesion that feels like the entire deck has been designed towards one specific goal, including the objectives. So that's really exciting. So what comes with the Tooth and Claw card, or deck rather, the Rivals deck, is it's 32 cards. 12 objectives, 10 power cards, and 10 upgrades. But what's really cool about the rival decks that have come in the Gnarlwood is that there are cards called plot cards. So on the back of the card that has all the list of cards for the deck, there's a plot card. Now the plot thickens is that this is the particular rules or the story that is accompanied with your deck. And it essentially allows you to play with additional rules that allow the deck to fully function. So if you look at Tooth and Claw, it has its plot card right here, and it says, if you include one or more cards in your deck that bear the Tooth and Claw symbol, show this to your opponent in the Reveal Your Warband step, which is at the beginning of the game, and use the following rules in the game. Now, this is really cool because what this does is this allows you to have a lot of flavor and uniqueness when playing with your rival's deck, so that every experience feels different, at least, to your opponent's Rivals deck, and allows players to experience a wide breadth of rules, strategies, and tactics, right? So, let's jump into this particular plot card, and then we can get our thoughts on plot cards in general and what they might mean for the future of Warhammer Underworld. So, the special rules that follow here. At the start of a friendly fighter's activation, you can stagger that fighter. A fighter in any warband is considered savage, which is a keyword, while any of the following are true. That fighter has one or more charge tokens, that fighter is staggered, and that fighter has two or more wound counters, which means they've taken two damage. So, Zach, first I want to get your thoughts on what plot cards might mean for the future and how you're perceiving them and if you like the idea of it. And then secondly, give me your thoughts on the mechanics that come with the Tooth and Claw deck.
For plot cards in general, I think it's really interesting. It's something we have seen before in Dire Chasm. Effectively, Primacy was a plot card, even though it affected both players, and it looks like this plot card and the one for the other Rivals deck only affect the player who's playing it in their deck to an extent. Any fighters are savage because of this plot card, but only you have the ability to make yourself staggered to become savage. So there's like a little bit of a trade-off there. It's also very similar to Khagra's Ravagers, their desecration token, which was a separate card that you would just have on the side of the board that would allow them to desecrate tokens. And it's cool to see this implemented into a neutral deck like this. We didn't really go over it during the core rules, but even in Championship, you can include a plot card, but you can only ever include one plot card in your deck. So if you like this Savage mechanic and you're going to include some of these cards in your Championship deck, you can take the Tooth and Claw plot card, but you wouldn't be able to take, for instance, the Daring Delvers plot card. For this one in particular, I think it's very cool because it is just, it's aggro, right? It's aggro in a nutshell. You become savage if you have a charge token. Well, you like charging. You become savage if you have a stagger token. Well, you can, if you're not going to charge and you're just going to do a regular attack, you can stagger yourself and then attack. You're savage if you're wounded. Well, you're going to be brawling, so maybe you're going to take a hit and then be savage. So, or like, you know, there are some cards that interact with enemy savage fighters. So staggering an enemy or hurting an enemy or, you know, having an enemy charge you, like, it's very straightforward. But it does add some depth to the game because you have control over what savage is and what it means for you and how and when your fighters become savage. So I like this one. It feels like a really good introductory plot card because it's not complicated and it is it's very streamlined with how the rest of the deck functions. Do you like this one, Amon?
I completely agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like plot cards. I like the idea of how they function, as I kind of mentioned earlier, but in particular to Tooth and Claw, it's very simple, right? It's not like overly complicated. There are three conditions that you have to really think about when you're thinking about whether your fighter is considered to be savage. Now, the cool thing about plot cards is it actually adds an additional element to your opponent as well. Because, you know, once your opponent gets familiar with the Tooth and Claw deck and they kind of realize how it functions, then it might incentivize them to play the game a little bit differently, which is what I really enjoy. Because A, I'm having my own unique experience playing my unique rules in my unique deck that can't be replicated outside of this particular Rivals deck for now.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to that, my opponent is also having a unique experience in that they're probably playing their own unique rival deck with their own unique rules or mechanics or synergy. And then they have to contend with mine as well, meaning that if they know that them being savage, for example, is a detriment to them in some form, or can open up to where I can maybe be more accurate against them or do more damage against them, then they might not charge all the time, right? Or they might not, or they might heal fighters that usually they wouldn't heal because that fighter has wound counters, right? Like,
yeah, or go on guard to get rid of their stagger tokens.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there's just so much thought and synergy that can go into this for both players that I think it's refreshing and exciting, but it's not complicated because, again, is your fighter staggered? They're a savage.
Right.
Are they not staggered? They're not savage. You know, do they have a charge token? Staggered. Stuff like that. It's super easy. The card is there on the side. I like it. I'm a big fan. And with that, I think we should probably jump in to the objectives, unless you have any more thoughts on it.
I have the only final thought I think I have is just because they are going to focus a lot, they being GW, are going to focus a lot on Nemesis as a format. I think this is exciting. These plot cards are exciting because it adds another element to it. Previously, Rivals decks that you would pick for Nemesis, it was just kind of like the decks are an archetype. You know, Maze Breachers and Vainglorious Raiders are aggro. Illusory Might is like aggro flex. Deadly Depths is a flex deck. You know, Patient Lurkers is like a hold feature tokens deck. But this really makes it feel so that Tooth and Claw is an aggro deck, but it's an aggro deck with this mechanic, and it's going to feel unique from other aggro Rivals decks. So I really like it. That's going to differentiate Nemesis quite a bit more, and I hope they keep doing these plot cards for Rivals decks for the rest of the season.
Yeah, that's actually a great point in that it is a unique version of a core archetype that has existed in the game for a very long time, which is cool. And the cool thing is this also works in Championship. So
yeah, absolutely.
You know, you can use these rules if you want to. So why don't we start with the objectives? So we'll just take turns as per usual. Do you want me to start? Do you want to start? Because there's no fighter cards. It's a little different.
Why don't you start this time?
Okay, cool. So the first card is called Embraced Savagery. It's a surge for one glory. Score this immediately after an activation if each surviving friendly fighter is savage.
It's great because you have a lot of control over it. Obviously, we've just talked about how you can control whether fighters are savage by charging or activating and staggering. It's better for smaller teams, obviously. 3 and 4 fighter teams can make this done very easily. It's a little bit harder if you've got 5 or more fighters. But if you're playing like Rippas with this and you're just making 3 charges in turn 1, you can guarantee score this basically every turn. And that's awesome.
Yeah, completely agree. And I'm trying to think of like warbands that really enjoy, you know, and that can get, you know, new life breathed into them. And like Magoris Fiends is a great one. You charge 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all your fighters are savage.
And if you don't have a charge,
Reavers, I mean, there's 5 fighters.
Yeah. I was just going to say, even if you don't have a charged target, you can just move and stagger yourself if you really want to score this.
Correct. Yeah. So, very easy, controllable card. Harder for larger warbands, but, you know, when you're playing Nemesis, maybe you don't have to take this card if you're still playing an aggressive warband.
Mm-hmm.
Next card is Ferocious Rampage. Dual score this in an end phase if each surviving friendly fighter is savage and or inspired, and there are no fighters holding objectives.
It's a little bit hard because you can't always control. I'm trying to remember because I read through this deck a while ago. I'm trying to remember how many push cards are in this deck for purposes of getting enemies off objectives. I think if you're a faster warband that's running this deck, you know, like Rippas, like Reavers, you just lose a guy and then you make some 5-hex charges. It can be pretty easy, actually. Especially if you, like, charge across the board, attack somebody, or you charge across the board, you end on an objective, attack somebody, and then delve, and then it's harder for them to get that objective. I think this is I think it's good, but it's a little bit more limited by matchup and by what your warband is trying to do.
Agreed, yeah. It's just really the surge that we just discussed, plus no fighters holding objectives, and in Gnarlwood, objectives start face up, so I think it's going to be a little harder to do. Next one is Focal Point. Dual score this in the end phase if a friendly leader is within 2 hexes of 2 or more other fighters from 2 or more warbands, and that leader is in enemy territory.
It's cool. It's thematic. I mean, there's some factions where you have a big beefy leader that wants to get over the no man's land line into enemy territory. And all you have to do is be near one of yours and one of an enemy. I guess you can kind of think of it like unafraid, but it only has to be one fighter, but it specifically has to be your leader. So if your leader dies, it's less good. But if your leader's alive and aggro, it's just as good, if not better. I think you're going to see this in a lot of decks. Your leader usually is your best fighter. So yeah, I think it's good, but not for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because this deck wants you to be aggressive. So, you know, you mentioned Malog. I mentioned Magor earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Even Elethane, right? Like Velmorn, like Sarakar, Blackwing. Like these are all fighters that want to be aggressive and can be aggressive, but also like being supported. Maybe not Malog per se, but You know, like it's, I'm going to think about it in terms of Magor's Fiends or even Khagra's Ravagers, because it's pretty, pretty basic in terms of like their game plan. Mm-hmm. You know, you charge me or I charge you and then I move a fighter up and I make sure I push them up there. Or I charge another fighter or the same fighter. You know, it's pretty reliable in that sense. Like the way I look at it, this is almost like unafraid, but a little bit easier.
Yeah.
And so I really like this card, actually.
Yeah, I think it's solid.
Because you can control half of it and mostly control the enemy positioning.
Yeah.
The next card is Fully Committed. This is a duel for 2 glory. Score this in an end phase if 3 or more friendly fighters are in enemy territory.
And each of those fighters are savage.
Ah, yeah, that's right. I mean, I was like, why is he quiet? But yep, I just didn't finish reading the card.
Yeah. And those are, I mean, it might as well just say 3 or more friendly fighters on enemy territory because of this way, the way this deck works, you're basically always going to be savage. This one actually, unlike some of the other ones we've talked about, feels a little bit better for larger warbands. If you're playing a 3-man warband like Rippas, like Crushas, even like Condemners, the Stormcast Sequiturs, you lose one guy and this is a dead card. But if you're playing a larger aggro warband, if you're playing Cunning Crew, if you're playing perhaps even Despoilers, perhaps, who are on this card, you can lose a couple fighters and still score this. So, much like the other ones, this is kind of warband dependent, but it's really reliable. I mean, all you're doing is getting in enemy territory and doing the savage thing that you're going to be doing anyway. So, it's a good card.
Yeah, I completely agree. Cool. Well, the next card is Hurricane Force, Duel. Score this in the end phase if each surviving friendly fighter is in enemy territory, and there are no enemy fighters in your territory for 3 glory.
It's a lot harder, right? I mean, preventing enemies from getting in your territory, if you're facing another Tooth and Claw deck, they're going to be trying to get over your line. I don't think I like it as much. I think maybe in Championship, this could be like a meta card if Hold Objective becomes a big thing, if, you know, kind of passive things like Harrows become very, very common. You might end up taking this as kind of like a counter to that, but I think in general, it's a little too difficult to control for my taste.
Yeah, from all 3 formats, Rivals, Nemesis, and Championship, the way I'm looking at this is Conquest and Denial in one card. And
in any end phase at that.
Yeah, and in any end phase. So that's why, sure, it's... You can be scored in any version of the game, but it's twice as hard as both of those cards.
Mm-hmm.
So, for that reason, I do kind of struggle the inclusion in Nemesis and in Championship and Rivals. I think it's going to be a card that's pretty difficult. But if you do score it, it's going to be earlier than later. And that actually might also not be true, because if you just start killing stuff, then it can be maybe easier at the end of the game as well. But at that point, it's already like a win more card because you've already probably won at that point.
So yeah, then it's like Annihilation.
I struggle with this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I struggle with this one. The next one, this was previewed on the Warcom article. Leaderless Pack. Score this in the end phase if each enemy leader is out of action.
For 1 glory, I'm not crazy about it. I mean, these cards we see all the time, both in faction and neutrals, kill enemy leader, get, you know, minimal stuff out of it. I'm not crazy about it. I think it's something you're going to be trying to do, and in Rivals, you're not going to hate this card because you're just going to be hunting down enemy leaders anyway. But it's not a card I would choose to include if there were better options available.
Agreed. Yeah, I don't really think there's much more to say about it. I mean, I think when you're being aggressive, you're going to try to kill stuff, including the enemy leader, when the opportunity presents itself. So, sure. But I think you're right in that there are probably more reliable and better and easier cards to score as you move up the formats, if you will.
Mm. Yeah.
The next one is Macabre Spectacle Surge for 1 glory. Score this immediately after a friendly fighter's attack action that took the target out of action if that friendly fighter was savage before you activated them.
So this one's a little bit... It's interesting because savage before you activated them means you can't just give them a stagger token and charge, or you can't just charge and have the charge token. It means you either have to be wounded or have otherwise given them a stagger token. Or I guess with the new charge rules, you have to have had everybody charge and then have a charged fighter activate and do an attack. It's a little bit harder to pull off. There are ways in this deck to give yourself stagger tokens or to be counted as savage when you don't have the other components. I think you probably do still include it because it's a kill surge in an aggro deck, and you probably will just throw it in Nemesis. I don't know if it makes the cut in Championship, however.
Yeah, I agreed. Unless there's a benefit for you to stagger yourself, which often there isn't, I struggle for this inclusion in Championship. I completely agree. That being said, I think with some power card support, you can make it more reliable if your goal is to really just ooga booga down the board, right? Like you like to say.
So. Yeah, ooga booga aggro.
The next one is called Mauled. Surge, score this immediately after a friendly fighter's attack action that took the target out of action if that friendly fighter was supported by one or more savage fighters.
This is really, really good. We had previously in in Dire Chasm, Orchestrated Kill, which was kill something while there's a friendly fighter adjacent to it. This is effectively the same card 95% of the time, but occasionally you will have effects like Gnarl Spirit Pack have, or like Hexbane's Hunters have, where you have fighters that count as supporting even when they're not adjacent, or like Sons of Velmorn have. So it can be actually quite easy to pull off. It's already quite easy for some factions, like Elthane Soul Raid with the fish. It's very easy to pull this off with. But it becomes very even easier for certain factions that have support shenanigans. Of course, those supporting fighters do have to be savage, so there is some setup to it. But I think just with the rate at which you're going to be creating and having savage fighters, it's probably good enough to include in your decks in any format, that is.
I completely agree with your assessment. I think this is a very good card in all formats. I think there are warbands that come in the box, like the Velmorn and the Gnarl Spirit Pack, that want to be supported. They have inbuilt supporting strategies. I think there are a lot of currently popular warbands, like the card art implies, Hexbanes, but even Gits, Starblood Stalkers, I feel like we'll see a bit of a resurgence as well, with some of their cards being a bit more viable now. There's so many different fighters and warbands from so many different types of warbands that can see this being played, and I really like it.
Good stuff.
Yeah. The next one is Move or Die. One glory. Score this in an end phase if each surviving friendly fighter has one or more move and or charge tokens.
I like it. So when this is in a faction deck, I think there's a Sons of Elmorn card like this that we just talked about. And I don't think it's very good for them because they have five fighters and you don't always want to be moving or charging. Sometimes you want your leader to kind of be supporting from a position or something like that. But because it's neutral, you can give it to small warbands, Stormcast warbands. Gore Chosen would be an excellent card for this because they do want to be making three charges or three moves. Rippas, as I keep saying, because they're just kind of the quintessential three fighter warband. And yeah, I think it's not going to see play in every warband. I think even in Nemesis, like, if you're a five or six fighter warband, you're probably not caring about this. It's probably not making your Nemesis cut, but it's a really solid one glory end phase for elite warbands. And for that reason, it's a sleeve it for me.
Yeah, completely agree that this is a size dependent card. You have small warband that's going to be aggressive. Great. Like, for example, Dread Pageant. Don't know if you might take this because you might have a lot of push tech.
True.
Maybe you're not always moving Glissette. Maybe you're not always moving Hadzu. But again, for like Magors or Ravagers or Hexbanes or Gnarl Spirit, or even Gits, for example.
Where you have multiple
because they can
tokens.
Just move their fighters so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly, like multi-move actions. Even with Guard, in theory, you know, you move two fighters. You know, it's hard, but you can do it. So I think the ability to do it and accomplish it is there. But you're really going to see it shine in four or less fighter warbands, as you said. Paragon of Ferocity is the next one for one glory. Surge Hybrid. Score this immediately after a Savage friendly fighter's attack action takes the target out of action if that friendly fighter is in enemy territory or the target was an enemy leader.
I think it's good. I mean, killing an enemy while you're in enemy territory is like 90% of what this deck wants to do. And you want to be savage while doing it, so that's great. Again, killing enemy leaders is good. If the enemy leader is being aggressive and wants to come to you, then you could do it in your territory. It's just solid. There's not much to talk about here. It's like a generically good aggro card.
Yeah, I completely agree. In the past, we've seen cards that are like, kill the enemy leader for a surge, and you're like, why does this exist? So hard to do. Yeah. But now, this card lets you reap the reward for killing the enemy leader, but also just being aggressive. So the two options there make it a great card. And I've always said, like I even said this on the last episode, and last might be different depending on what order you've listened through these, but the cards that offer you more choice tend to be better cards because they can let you adapt on the fly. And this is one of those cards.
Yes, absolutely.
The next one is called Supreme Savagery. For two Glory Surge duel, two Glory Surge here, score this immediately after a Savage friendly leader's attack action if the target was taken out of action, and that was the second or subsequent fighter your leader has taken out of action.
It's really good. I mean, it's dicey, right? Your leader has to be in a position where they can attack multiple times. Your leader has to hit multiple times and get through multiple times. But I mean, this is a Moloch card, right? Like, Moloch's going to kill two things a turn most of the time, yeah, and get two glory from it, yeah, or four glory from it, technically, because you like to add in fighter kills from it as well. You can score this in one go if your leader has a scything attack and you hit multiple fighters with that scything attack. This is really, really good. This might even be like a restricted card in championship format.
Yeah, this scares me. Because of Force Moloch, because like you know, as you mentioned, the four to that equates to, it's a two glory surge, one kill. So four glory, four bounty. Could even be more if one of those fighters that you took out was large, right?
True.
Could even be a five glory.
Scary to think about.
Or six glory if you kill two large fighters, which Moloch can most certainly do.
True, yes.
This is a very good card. I think you're right. Any leader that has a scything ability is automatically at the top. I think Mighty Swing can really help you swing this in your favor as well. So I think that's a really good option to think about in championship. In Nemesis and Rivals, this is just going to be like a dicey card, and that's okay. But the good thing about leaders in Underworlds is they tend to be your best fighters more often than not. And they can be able to do this. Like, you're not doing this with Kixie Taka, right?
Yeah, right.
But you're going to do it with Magor or Kagra even, or Blackwing, Velmorn, Haskell, Hexbane.
Yeah, and it doesn't say anything about ranges either. Like, if you have a good range 3 fighter, like Sarkar,
Stormsire, Thundrick.
I don't know if Thundrick wants to run all the Savage stuff, but like, man, if you take this with Profiteers and you just like move Thundrick up the board and shoot twice, you can absolutely score this. Scary. Yep.
It's worth it because in strategies where your leader is very powerful and you're going to Voltron them, and if you're newer, Voltron means stacking a bunch of upgrades on them to give them a lot of power and synergy, then this is a really good card. I'm higher on it than I would have been previously, I think. Now, our last objective here is called Toyed With. Score this immediately after a friendly fighter's attack action if one or more enemy fighters are vulnerable for one glory.
We've talked about how we are on vulnerable as a mechanic. Obviously, the best thing you want here is like, oh, you charge up with 2 damage and hit a 3-wound fighter, and then they're vulnerable, and you score this even though you don't kill. But, like, you want to kill things, right? Like, you prefer things being dead. Or I guess the best result is there is another vulnerable enemy fighter, and then you charge somebody else or something like that. I guess it's nice if you have a lot of scything, because often scything will leave one guy vulnerable and kill somebody else, or, like, leave multiple fighters vulnerable that you can clean up later on. So there's a little bit of interest there. But I think overall it's kind of meh. It's like a C tier card for me.
Yeah, it is, but it also isn't. And I'll tell you why. Mm. If you're going to play a deck, whether most likely, so in Rivals itself, the format, this is a, it's actually not a hard card to score.
Oh, sure.
Because, yeah, you know, from a scoring perspective, it's not difficult, right? And most enemies will, like, say, how much damage are you doing? 2? Okay, so all my fighters are 3 wounds. Okay, I'll just let it go because they don't have to invest in order to save, right? Mm-hmm. So from a scoring perspective, I just want to highlight, this is a very good card to score.
Very fair.
What Zach is talking about is that when you get into intermediate and championship levels of play, you just don't want to leave enemy fighters alive, right? That's the trade-off, is that why are you purposefully trying to leave people alive when you should be killing them? The reason I like this card in Nemesis and in Championship is if you're playing a lot of ping damage. So if you're playing Shadeborn, which they might struggle now, but I mean, we'll see. But Profiteers, right? You like taking these ping damage cards. Lethal Ward is evergreen. Toxic Gases. Even with the Gnarl Spirit pack, like, there's a card that can give Thedra like a Twist the Knife type ability. Not Thedra. Crimson Kira, right? And even actually the Chaos cards, where it's like there's one card which is like after you make an attack action, take a damage, deal a damage, right? So you can leave a fighter on vulnerable, and as long as it's not a reaction that happens before the attack action ends, you can do that and then finish them off in the power phase. And that's not bad.
That's true. That's actually a really good point. It does increase in value the more pings you are taking. And I like your point about Rivals, where, you know, in Rivals, there's not a whole lot of great strength, great fortitude. Well, I mean, you have to look at what's in this deck, right? And there is some plus damage in here, but it's not, it's not as ubiquitous as it is in Championship, for instance. So leaving fighters on vulnerable in Rivals or in Nemesis to an extent as well is just something that happens, and it's part of your game plan. So yeah, I think you're right. I think you've sold me. I think this is better than I gave it credit for in the first place.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that, because it's sometimes hard to like think in different like format lenses.
Absolutely.
You know? But for a beginner, I think they can look at this card and be like, oh, I can score this, and it also teaches them about vulnerable. So. Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, that's all 12. From a scoring perspective, I think there's some hits and some misses. What I think we're going to do is we're going to just talk about our favorites. We'll keep running through the deck and then just talk about this deck as a whole, because I think that is the best way to, you know, talk about what and how this deck functions. So, Zach, what's your favorite card in the deck, in the objective deck?
I think for me, it's got to be... I mean, obviously, there's some really good surges, but I think I'm going to go with Focal Point. I like this positional type card. I like playing around your leader. I think it's really cool, and I think there's a lot of warbands that could benefit from it. So I'm going to go with Focal Point. How about you, Aman?
Yeah, I think Focal Point is probably one of the better ones. I like Mauld. Mauld is really good. Mm. Works really well, I think, with the two warbands that come in the starter set, but also with a lot of other warbands just in general. And Mauld is a surge as well, so.
Cool. Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it's a good one. There's a lot of good cards in here, for sure.
All right, well, why don't you start off with the ploys, the gambits?
Yeah, so I'll read these through. First, we've got Blinding Helix. Choose one Savage fighter within 3 hexes of your leader. That fighter's player rolls 1 defense dice for each of the fighter's chosen upgrades, or chosen fighter's upgrades. If they roll 1 or more shield symbols, nothing happens. Otherwise, the chosen fighter is a beast. This effect persists until the chosen fighter or your leader is taken out of action.
This is really interesting, because what effectively this does is, with the changes to how beast works, is that if you see an enemy fighter with attack action upgrades, you can turn them into a beast, hypothetically. You know, let's say that, you know, you see a lot of times, like, a lot of smaller fighters with, like, +1 strength, you know, Soul Tooth Dagger or Curse Boarding Pike, and then they kind of just go try to attack you and deal a lot of damage. And sometimes those fighters can, you know, be, you know, can come back and get race tokens. So what you can do is if you turn them into a beast, they have to immediately break, which is discard all attack action upgrades, which is pretty cool. This can also stop a fighter from being able to hold an objective because beasts cannot hold objectives, which is also pretty cool as well. Now, it is a bit of a risk. I mean, you're likely going to roll, I think, a block on average if your upgrade has, if your opponent has three upgrades or more. Less than that, I think it does become a bit of a gamble. I'm not going to do the maths here, but I think this is good for perhaps the objective denial portion more so than the
upgrade denial.
Exactly. Yeah.
Rules lawyery question. Can you play this if the opponent has zero upgrades? They don't roll any dice, like by that weird gambit fulfillment thing. Can they just roll zero dice and then you could just innately turn them into a beast without a dice roll involved?
Yeah. Yeah, because it doesn't say choose a friendly fighter with one or more upgrades.
Yeah.
It just says but the fighter must be savaged.
Right.
Right. That's the one stipulation. You're choosing a savaged fighter. And then if they don't have any upgrades, you don't roll any defense dice.
That in mind, I think it could be really interesting in round one. Your opponent charges in. They become savage because they have a charge token. Before they put an upgrade on, you just hit them with a blinding helix. And now, you charged in, and you have an attack action upgrade in your hand. You cannot put it on this fighter. Oh, you charged in and you're standing on an objective because you want to score that objective. Sucks to be you. I don't even have to roll dice. You're just going to be a beast for the rest of the game. Like you said, later on, once there's more upgrades on and you can't really do it on a fighter that has a bunch of stuff on them. But yeah, it's kind of cool. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. And I was thinking back to how I was phrasing some of the sentences earlier, and I just want to super clarify, which you kind of tied into towards the end. This is better on fighters with lesser upgrades, right? If they have three or more, that's where it's going to get hard because they're going to roll that block more likely. But ideally, I think the way that this card is designed is you just want to play this on someone that's not upgraded.
Yeah, absolutely. So next we have Call to Heal. Choose one beast or one savage fighter. Push the chosen fighter 1 hex or up to 4 hexes if it is a friendly fighter, so it is adjacent to a friendly fighter.
This is an amazing card. You're going to be able to savage fighters all over the game. In some games where you have beasts that are innately in your warband or can become beasts, cough, Gnarl Spirit Pack, this is insane.
Cough, Exile, Dead.
Now, so, yeah. But even like, well, yeah, Exile, Dead too. I forget they're all beasts. Yeah, this is pretty fantastic. And even if you're savaged, like, you're able to reap the benefits here because it's very easy to get a fighter to become savaged. And so even if a fighter is charged, you can still push them and maybe make and provide you supports or maybe move on to an objective. You know, it's there's just so many options here. It's one of the best cards I've seen in the new season.
Mm-hmm. I would definitely agree with everything you just said. It's gains value in some factions, but even in other factions that don't have beasts or aren't really good at savage, it's still just a good card in general. Dark Command is our next card. Choose one beast or one savage fighter. Deal one damage to one enemy fighter adjacent to the chosen fighter.
Yeah, super, super solid. I mean, we talked about ping damage earlier. We talked about leaving a fighter invulnerable and then maybe doing damage. Again, this is super great for Gnarl Spirit Pack. I think we're going to reference them a lot in this episode because they can become beasts so often. But even with Hexbanes, right? You can charge with your fighter, then get a support from your dog. Maybe you can't finish the fighter off, and then the dog allows you to do so because they can deal that damage. So I think the options are very open for fighters who have beasts innately. But then again, because it's so easy to access the savage concept, it's still playable there. But I think this really shines in those warbands that don't need to go savage.
Yeah. Like you said, any warband with beasts, like Soul Raid is still very good and will continue to be good after the rotation. And you can just do this off of the fish. like even without any of the Savage stuff. So it's a good card in general, I think.
Yeah.
Next we have Determined Brutality. The first range 1 attack action made in the next activation has Cleave or Ensnare. Pick which one during the Declare Attack action step.
This is solid. I mean, it's just an accuracy boost. I think you're not going to want to use this with like regular dice attacks. Like if you're just 2-smash, maybe it's not worth investing it because you only get that shot once. But let's say you've stacked some upgrades or Voltron to Fighter and then you play this card, then you can kind of pick and choose what you need, which is what makes Lythale so great from the Shadeborn, is that she can kind of pick and choose what she needs before she goes in with her super accurate attack. And it's accurate, not because she gets to pick Cleave or Ensnare. It's true that it is, but it's because she has a 3-smash attack. So once you get a fighter to 3 Fury or 3 Smash or 3 Damage and they're rolling more dice with the propensity to roll higher number of successes, then I think this card becomes really solid.
Yeah, I would echo everything there. The range 1 stipulation does kind of stink a little bit, but plenty of factions don't really care about that because they're majority range 1 anyway. So, yeah, just a solid card as the game goes on. Now we've got... This is a fun, flavorful card. I love this card design-wise. This is called Gore Swamp. Domain. +1 move to corn fighters, because they love gore. Each other fighter has a move characteristic of 2 while that fighter is making a move action that is not part of a charge super action. This effect persists until the end of the round or until another domain gambit is played. It's a domain. I forgot to mention that at the beginning.
Yeah. So first of all, glad that domains are being continued to be supported. I think it is a neat and nifty aspect of the game that you'll be able to see more at the Nemesis and Championship level. What I really like about this card is that this deck isn't like lying to itself. It knows that it's an aggro deck that wants to hit people and invade enemy territory. Well, guess which warbands love doing that? Khorne warbands. And because this is called the Gore Swamp, as you mentioned, you know, Khorne fighters love blood and gore. So it's a boon to them. This incentivizes you for playing a Khorne warband because it makes them faster. But this is also a control card because it makes fighters who are not charging a movement of 2. So essentially what it says is fight each other and charge each other or like pay the consequences. Super thematic. And the Khorne stuff is just nice. But like, you know, I really like this deck with Magore's Fiends.
Yeah.
And making all of my Magore's Fiends 4 move before they inspire is pretty nice. Even Riptooth can just jump up to 5 before he inspires.
Scary.
Which is great. Yeah. So
yeah.
I like that this is, you know, forcing the combat.
Absolutely. I would agree with everything you said. I do like that this is like, it's almost a gore chosen card in a neutral set, just because it's like, it's Khorne, it's domain, it's an aggro card. Mm. It's a gore chosen card.
Yeah. That's true. It's very good for them as well because they like domains.
Next we have Internal Surrender. Choose a friendly fighter. The chosen fighter is Savage. +1 dice to their range 1 attack actions. -1 defense from the chosen fighter to a minimum of 1. This effect persists until that fighter is taken out of action.
Yeah, this is actually pretty nutty if you think about it. You just put this on a fighter who has 1 defense, like someone from Magore's Fiends, and it doesn't matter because they don't have to pay the penalty. Mm-hmm. And then it's just +1 dice permanently to the game. And all you had to do was savage them beforehand, which is pretty solid. And it is a persisting effect, so it can be removed by cards that remove persisting effects. But you don't really see that very often intentionally. Like there might be some Rivals decks that are good at turning this off. But outside of them, I think in Nemesis and Championship, like this is a very, very good card. And one that I think could be restricted just because it's perma +1 defense without even having a +1 offense without playing even a glory like most upgrades force you to.
Yeah. I think I may have misspoke or you may have misread one of the two. This doesn't require you to be savage. This makes you savage. This fighter is savage. So it also has synergies with the deck because like it, so say like the Mauled, which you said is your favorite objective, you have to be supported by a savage fighter. This allows you to make the fighter savage without activating them or wounding them or giving them a stagger card. You can just, you know, make say, one of your supporting fighters, Savage, charge with somebody else. This is great.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for that clarification there. I mean, it's still an insane card. It makes it even better, actually, now that you clarified
that. It's extremely good. So next we have Lurking Gnarl Oaks. I think this was teased on the Warcom site at some point. This is another domain card. Cover hexes are also lethal hexes. This effect persists until the end of the round or until another domain gambit is played.
So cover hexes aren't as prevalent as they have been in the past because you have to delve to them to get to that side. That being said, if you ever want to revisit the hectic pandemonium that was Dire Chasm and Beastgrave, this can allow you a little trip down nostalgia lane, if you really want, memory lane there. But from a functional perspective, regardless of the format you're playing, I think this card will struggle a little bit because I don't think we're going to see cover very often.
Yeah, well, I think I will make one stipulation is that we talked about it during the core set review. There are all the boards have cover hexes, and some of them have multiple cover hexes. You can catch people out with this. Like, if they're like, oh, I'm going to set up a board that has multiple cover hexes and I'm going to use them defensively, you could just play Lurking Gnarl Oaks and then just run to their territory and use those against them. It's not great because of that, and then they'll adapt in a best of three, and they won't put down boards like that anymore, but, like, there is, like, a little bit of trickery here you can try to catch people out with.
That's true. That's a good point to make as well.
Oh, also, I think this just is the biggest cover of darkness counter in the entire game, because they count every hex as a cover hex. So do they just take damage every time they move or are pushed? I don't know if it's supposed to work that way. I'm just saying, it's funny.
No, they don't. I think they work that back, right? In the last?
It's something like that. Well, I'll have to read it up again.
Yeah, I don't think it works like that anymore, but I think I like the fact that you mentioned that opponents might take a lot of cover hexes to protect them, and then you can kind of turn their protection into a detriment for at least a round.
Absolutely. Next we have Predatory Fog. This is another domain, third domain. After each fighter's activation, stagger that fighter unless that fighter made one or more range 1 or range 2 attack actions during that activation. This effect persists until the end of the round or until another domain gambit is played.
So I like this one for a bunch of reasons. First, thematicism. It's a fog, so it's hard to shoot. So that's why it's range 1 or range 2 versus range 3. So if you're playing a range 3 warband, this can affect you. But otherwise, like, I think you want to get staggered most often than not because you want to be savage with this deck. That being said, like, this is also a great way for your fighters to gain offensive rerolls to or against enemy fighters that may not necessarily try to engage you. Like, if I have a skink and I'm trying to move him onto objective, I'm just going to move him onto objective. Like, yeah, he gets staggered, but it furthers my game plan to hopefully he survives any potential attack, right? Whereas I'm not going to make a range 1 or range 2 attack action if it stops me from trying to score my end phase. So I think from a disruption perspective, this is actually pretty powerful because, again, like all the other cards in this deck, it forces both combatants, both teams to fight each other, which is cool.
Yeah, I like it as well. I like that it is something. It can be mitigated by your opponent because they can just start charging or just start attacking, but, like, it forces them to play in a way, and it forces intelligent play from both players. So I like that from that design perspective.
Yeah.
Reckless Haste.
Agreed.
This is a +2 move to fighters in the next activation. After the next activation, stagger each fighter that made one or more move actions during that activation.
From a rival's perspective, it's still good because you are effective. Like, +2 move is, like, ubiquitous since the start of this game, like 4 or 5 years ago. And it's a staple, right? It's helping you get across the board to make those charges. That's why you're probably taking this card, is to get you those charges. So it doesn't matter if you gain a stagger token, because you are going to get it anyways because you are savaged. Or not stagger, but you would have got savaged regardless. this does also make it to where, like, when you do take that risk and put that fighter out there next to an opponent to make an attack, this could slightly tilt it against your favor if that attack doesn't go through, because now you're easier to hit. So I would wait until maybe the end of the round or closer to the end of the round to use this card. But I still think plus two move is awesome, and it doesn't have to be with a charge. You can just run away or jump onto an objective to help you score cards as well, as long as you're not a beast. And so I think the options it offers are awesome, and I think the only reason they make you stagger is because it just has more synergy with the deck.
Well, I would counter that to say that it is in the next activation, so you can use this pseudo-aggressively, right? You can play this before your opponent's activation and be like, here, please have plus two move, but you'll be staggered and then I'm going to come for you and I will have all this aggro bonus as well. So you can, and like, you can kind of use it as like a bait, right? Be like, sure, yeah, you can charge a little bit further than you may have wanted to. Maybe you can get to one of my fighters, but if you don't do devastating damage with that charge, you're going to be in a bad spot and staggered. So there's a little bit of mind game with it as well. I don't know how often you'll use it for that. I think, like you said, more often than not, you're just going to be you're just going to be using it aggressively. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
oh, go ahead.
In that same line of thought, I think, yeah, in that same line of thought, if you can kind of, if you can anticipate what your opponent is going to do, like if you're like, man, if my opponent is trying to follow their game plan, I've already seen some of the cards in their deck, I have an idea, I know what they're trying to do, they're not going to engage, they're probably just going to move that fighter onto that objective to score some cards.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can anticipate it and then play it in their turn. And as long as you anticipate correctly, which is a risk because you could be wrong, then as you say, then it can be easier to hit them as well. So it doesn't necessarily have to be forcing them a charge to you as well. It just could be like, I know they're going to move and they're going to make the move regardless if I stagger them or not. But maybe now I have an easier chance to displace that fighter.
Yeah. I think the last thing I'll say, because we have talked about this one for a while, it does remind me a bit of Malkin Grace, which was a Beastgrave card that was plus two move, but you had minus one moves until the minus one wound until the end of the round. So in that way, you could think of it very similarly, where it's like, I'm going to play Malkin Grace as my fourth activation, get that plus movement, make that last minute charge, and then the downside will be immediately washed away. So you can kind of mitigate it to an extent, and you can kind of do the same thing here. But then we have...
Agreed.
Then we've got Savage Season. This is the last ploy for the turn, or for this deck. Choose one or more friendly fighters. Heal one and stagger each chosen fighter.
It's pretty decent. I mean, like, if you're taking a lot of ping damage or chip damage, it's nice to be able to heal multiple fighters. I think heal one is something that I struggle with in terms of inclusion. Like, if I'm a large fighter, I don't mind heal one. But if I'm not a large fighter, then I think I want to heal two.
Sure.
So from Nemesis and Championship perspective, I don't know if this is going to be quite popular. But in the Rivals deck itself, like, heal is a heal, right? Like, it's worth it in most cases. And then again, this further helps you become savaged, which is important and relevant.
I will say, just because Nemesis really depends on whether your faction has a great fortitude, a plus wound or not. I think even in Nemesis, this is kind of okay, because heal one is sometimes kind of like plus one wound, kind of, sort of. But I think you're right. I think it's less valuable than a heal two in most factions. But that brings us to the end of the ploys. Some really solid ones in here, some really interesting ones. Amon, what is your pick for favorite ploy?
Easy, Internal Surrender.
Yeah.
Card is nutso.
Very good. I'm going to go with Dark Command. You know me, I love ping cards, and I think this is just a really solid ping card.
Yeah, I think it's great. It's very good with a bunch of, you know, warbands that are doing well in the
meta. True.
So. And new ones. Cool. Well, let's jump to upgrades. And we're going to start with the Beast Claws. It's an attack action upgrade. Range 1, 2 Fury, 2 damage. Flurry. While this fighter is Savage, you can reroll any number of attack dice in the attack roll.
It's fine. I mean, it's actually pretty good in Nemesis, where you don't necessarily have access to better attack action upgrades. So if you're a faction taking Tooth and Claw and you have some fighters with bad attacks, this is a solid attack to throw on somebody, because it's, in a way, it is 4 fury, 2 damage, kind of. I mean, the way rerolls and plus dice work is similar, but not the same. But yeah, I think it's good. Like, it's good, but not great, is how I would say it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you do the math, I think 2 fury being able to reroll any attack dice kind of comes out to like a 3 fury attack.
Probably, yeah.
So from that perspective, it's truly not bad, especially if you can get supports. The next one is Beast Caller. When a Savage friendly fighter is the target of an attack action, this fighter is supporting that fighter. Reaction. After a Savage fighter is pushed other than by this reaction, push that fighter 1 hex towards this fighter.
It's a really good upgrade. Like, just supporting all Savage fighters on the board, no matter what. You know, you just talked about how much you love Internal Surrender. Whoever has this upgrade is always supporting your Internal Surrender guy, and they're getting +1 dice. That's a really sick combo. Mm-hmm.
It is.
And then you kind of have this this push mechanic, which is like, you charge forward, you get a guy Savage, your opponent charges them and drives them back as part of the attack, then you Beast Caller push with their reaction. Like, this is a good card all around. It's not like a power spike card. You're not like putting this on and then you're like, ha ha ha, now I'm like absolutely demolishing you. But I think the support and utility it brings is probably worthy of an inclusion even in Championship, if you are doing Savage stuff in Championship.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where the line gets drawn, is that, like, how much Savage stuff are you going to throw into your Championship deck? Like, this is solid in Rivals, solid in Nemesis. I think once you get a Championship, I think the lines blur a little bit in terms of, like, am I just going to pick and choose the top 30 or 40 best cards, you know? Or am I going to actively try to build out a Savage Championship deck?
Right.
But, yeah, it's cool nonetheless. The next one is Brutal Transformation, where Wall Up the Skull just goes Hulk mode here. That's insane. Yeah. You cannot give this to a leader or a large fighter. This fighter is a beast. +2 damage, this fighter's range 1 attack actions. This fighter cannot make super actions.
This is a really good card. I mean, you can't charge with it, worth noting. So hopefully you're bringing pushes. Hopefully you're, you know, in a good position before you upgrade it. Maybe it's like a last ditch. You throw it on somebody, they do a massive attack, and then they die because they can't charge. So yeah, there's that to think about. It also comes with a beast downside, which is a reasonable downside for a lot of factions. I would be remiss not to mention Exile Dead here, where your zombies never make super actions anyway, because you're just making the super action with Dentalos. And you can just throw this on, I don't know, Ione or Coil, and just give them +2 damage to their attack, and it's really, really silly. Yeah. So
it's solid.
Faction specific, I would say, but in some factions, it's probably pretty bonkers.
Yeah, I don't think you give this to Coil, because he's already like the 2 damage one. So you just put another threat out there, right? Unless you're trying to get Coil to 4 damage off the jump, which is nutty.
Which is scary. Yeah.
But
I think more often than not, you just give it to whichever zombie dies first, because once they die and come back, they gain a scything attack. And now you have a 3 damage scything attack, and that's crazy.
That's true. Well, a scything attack would be a super action.
Oh, so true. Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to make a scything attack.
Okay, that's much more balanced then. Yeah. So I guess you probably give it to Balt, because he's the one that has cleave, and now your dude has a 3 damage cleave attack on your little zombie, which is awesome. It's good.
Yeah, pretty solid. Outside of the Exiled Dead, this card is going to be super useful with fighters who can move around the board a lot organically. And so because you can't use this, because the fighter is now like permanently stopped from making charges, you're going to have to really try to figure out, like, is my fighter in a spot that my opponent has to come to me to be removed? or can I just push their way all over the board to be able to do other things? Like, for example, I think this is really good on the dogs from Hexbanes, because the dogs just move around the board all the time.
And they're already beasts as well.
And so maybe if you... Exactly. So you can just kind of, you know, make their three fury attack, I guess, once one of them is when they're inspired, do a three fury, three damage attack. Like, that's pretty solid. That's a Briar Queen attack. Mm-hmm. Speaking of the Briar Queen, like, well, you can't give it to a leader, so it wouldn't work for her. But any fighter that, you know, even Dreppers, for example, because you can push them around the board, you can give this to one of the weaker fighters. Actually, no, that's a ranged
attack. Well, actually, I will say in Drepper, you could give this to the Patrician, who can push himself. He's only range one, and he's a three fury attack. That's so fair. You could consider this a like, usually the Patrician wants to set an objective, so becoming a beast kind of makes that a downside. But if you're playing it aggro, you can just be like, all right, I push the Patrician, now I'm adjacent to you, I'm just going to make a regular attack, three fury. I think he's two damage base, so three fury, four damage is, like, really strong. But what you were saying about Thorns, you can't give it to the Briar Queen, but you can Varklav push all your Chain Rasps, and then see which one your opponent pushes away, and then before your next activation, give this to one of your Chain Rasps that's adjacent to somebody and just make a punch with it. There's a lot of cool utility with this card, I think. Even Sepulchral Guard. Agreed. Yeah, I mean, Sepulchral Guard, you get a lot of multi-moves, and you can put fighters in places, and sometimes you don't even charge with them. So, yeah, it's cool for them as well.
Yeah, I think this card is more of a, oh, your enemy fighter happens to be next to one of my fighters.
Yes.
How can I punish you for it? And then you're going to have to make a choice. Do I give up the ability for this fighter to make a charge, knowing that if I can land this attack, this will help me win the game significantly, right? Like, you know, let's say you charge into three goblins, right? And you kill two of them, but you left the last one alive. Well, then now the goblin care can put brutal transformation on one of his fighters, and maybe, you know, the netter, Prog the netter, goes from three smash one damage attack to three smash three damage attack. It's pretty solid.
Solid.
You know?
Yeah. It's not like...
That's another way to look at it.
I would say it's not straightforward powerful, but is extremely interestingly powerful.
Yeah. Like, I think if you're going to expect people to end their activations next to your fighters, that's when I think this card shines.
Ooh, not to dwell too much on this card, but any fighter that can't be pushed, we talked about Darkwater Anchor. There's a couple fighters in the game that innately can't be pushed because they have guard or have some other rule. If somebody charges you, if somebody charges Glizette and doesn't kill her, you can just slap this on her. Because you'll just be adjacent.
Yeah, because I think once you park Glizette on an objective, she's not.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, talked about that one enough. It's a cool card. It's cool.
Okay. The next one we're going to talk about is Feral Alteration. You cannot give this to a large fighter. This fighter is a beast. Plus one move, plus one wounds. This fighter's range one and range two attack actions have knockback one. And before we get into it, I just want to say, Grawl looks huge here, and I think it's because he's been ferally altered.
Yes.
But, like, I wish he was just that big.
This raises my question, because in this, Grawl looks like a panther, but in the card art, I thought it was like a hyena or a dog or something.
He's a dog.
Blind dog. That's okay. Grawl. Well, his snout's a little confusing in this one, but yeah, I could definitely see it.
He's been fairly altered.
He's jacked, and even Ollo standing next to him looks tiny. This is great card art. Card art aside, this is a super interesting card, like a little bit like the last one. It's very interesting. You can't give it to a large fighter. It's a plus one card you can't give to a large fighter. And because of the new rules in the core, where if you become large, it would break immediately, it's not really something you can use to stack wounds either. If you can't even give this to a four wound fighter, because if you give it to a four wound fighter who's not large, it just breaks immediately because they become large. So this is something you're giving to a three wound fighter to make them a four wound fighter, which is actually a solid upgrade. Going from three to four is a big boost in this game in general. Like the knockback one is kind of, it's whatever. Getting knockback is fine. It's not something you really fish for. But getting plus one move and plus one wounds to a three wound fighter, putting that on one of the Sons of Elmorn, one of the Graveguard, that is, putting that on your smaller guys from Gnarl Spirit pack, putting that on Crimson Kira, who's already quite fast, and making her four wounds and a block instead. Yeah, it's good. It's going to be, like I said, it's going to be faction dependent. If you're a bunch of four wound fighters like Magor's Fiends, you can't even play this card. If you're a bunch of five wounds fighters like Crushes, you can't play this card. But I think there's a lot of factions that are going to love having this in their deck.
Yeah, plus one move, plus one wounds is very, very powerful. And if you're an aggro warband and you're not really caring about the objective, then you don't mind being beasts, right? Because you've got that decent attack profile. You don't need those upgrades, as you mentioned. And so even like Crimson Kira, she becomes a four wound. And then, you know, if she's in beast mode, right, then spirit tokens or counters, then she's getting that plus one move. And now she's a six moving fighter with four wounds doing a bunch of damage. I mean, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Next one is Feral Instincts. This fighter is a beast. Plus one damage to this fighter's range when attack actions. When activated, this fighter must make an attack action if it can. Otherwise, it must make a charge action if it can. Otherwise, it must make a move action that ends close to the nearest enemy fighter. If it cannot make any of these activations, it cannot be activated.
That's a really cool, great strength. The last couple cards we haven't talked about formats. This is not one I think you ever take in Championship because there's just better plus damage cards in the game. But in Nemesis, where plus damage cards are a little bit iffy, in Rivals, especially if you're just taking this deck, obviously it's a good card because you are just getting plus damage. That's good. The downside is not really a downside because if you've become a beast, you just want to be attacking and charging anyway. Obviously, it only works on range one. Kind of okay, whatever, but like there's a lot of fighters in the game that you're just gonna like this. There's no downside to this card for a lot of fighters. For some fighters it's not great. For a lot of fighters it's like you're just gonna take this, throw it on them, and be happy.
Yeah, I mean, agree with that, because the most of the time when you are attempting to put damage on a fighter, it's because you have an intent to make an attack action. So this really isn't a downside in most situations, because the goal is to always attack. Like, I'm not going to just throw a plus one damage on a fighter and then not attack with them, right? So, the downside is not very, not very
downsidey.
Considerable. Yeah, until you go past that activation. Mm-hmm. Like, if this is a round one activation, then yeah, it's going to be ABC, always be charging. But aside from that, not necessarily too much. The next one is Gifted Ferocity. This is a mutation. Plus one dice to this range, to this fighter's range when attack actions. Reaction after a friendly fighter's attack action that takes enemy fighter out of action. If this card is in your hand, give this upgrade to that fighter. It does not cost any glory points. So essentially, kill a fighter and then you can put this on your fighter for free and they get plus one dice to their range when attack actions.
I mean, we all know how good plus dice cards are. Accuracy cards are amazing. It's only range one, which is nice, but I mean, that's Ferocious Bite, that's Augmented Limbs back in the day, etc., etc. Plus dice cards are always good. If you're a range one warband, this is, makes it into Championship decks. This is excellent in Nemesis decks. There's nothing to say. It's a good card.
It's very, very good. All these cards get restricted in Championship. So
that's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Next one is Gifted Vitality, also a mutation with the same reaction I mentioned above. You cannot give this to a large fighter. At the end of the action phase, heal one this fighter.
I kind of like it. I mean, it's not Great Fortitude. But if you're playing Nemesis and Great Fortitude's not available and you're a four-wound fighter, it's kind of Great Fortitude. Sort of. In Nemesis, where, you know, people aren't really stacking 4+ damage, it's kind of a plus wound card, sort of. I don't know if it makes the cut, but I think it's at least worth a consideration if you're looking for a defensive card in Nemesis specifically. It's not good in Championship.
Yeah, the interesting thing with the limited... formats is when you take a look at Rivals and Nemesis, the fact that there are such limited card pools in some cases, where you're not going to see all this damage consistently and etc., then I think the impact of a heal is significantly larger, because most of the time, you're not slapping and one-shotting fighters off the board in those formats. It's possible. It will happen. But in this situation, like, there was a card that came out in this in Beastgrave or Nightvolt, I think. And I never played it, and I don't think anyone really played it competitively. Because it was like, you just got one shot. But in a limited format environment, like Rivals and Nemesis, again, I've said that a couple times now, this is going to be so much stronger because oftentimes you're only going to be able to do 2 damage. Mm-hmm. And now your fighter is like, well, I have 4 wounds now. If I get hit one more time, I die. But then I get this free heal at the end. That means now my opponent requires 2 more attacks, or they're going to have to invest additional resources in taking out my fighter, which does complicate things and stress out your opponent. So I know I'm down on heal 1 cards, but upon further reflection, I think it's better in the limited formats.
Yes, absolutely agree on all counts there. I mean, yeah, there will probably be some games where everything you could say about Great Fortitude, you could say about this card, except that it can't stack. So yeah, it's good. I think it'll be solid in Nemesis.
Yep. And you can give it to, you cannot give it to a large fighter, which is good. Mark of the Stampede. This fighter is a beast, +1 move, +2 move instead when this fighter is savage. This fighter cannot be staggered while this fighter is savage.
It's cool. I mean, it's hard to evaluate plus move cards because usually upgrades that just give you plus move are not very impactful. Usually upgrades are kept for plus damage, plus defenses, or like some really powerful effect. +2 move is really nice, but then you have to be savage, but you can't stagger yourself to savage. So you have to have a charge token already, which doesn't make sense because then you can't move. Because you become savage after you give yourself the charge token, at which point you will have already moved and don't get the extra bonus, or you'll have to have some taken damage or some other way to make you savage, like internal surrender. So you're not really getting the +2 move out of this very often on most fighters. Maybe if you're a large warband like a Molog, like a Crushes, where you have a lot of wounds and you will be consistently having taken 2 damage to become savage, you can kind of use this as like a catch-up mechanic sort of thing. I don't like it as much as some of the previous cards we've looked at. I think you'll find use for it, especially like in Nemesis or in Rivals where you have to take it. Maybe in Nemesis where you want a little bit more move, it's fine, but I don't think it's as good.
Yeah, I mean, I think, as you mentioned, these kind of cards are hard to evaluate. Like for Rippas, for example, you're going to love the movement. But then they have Loping Strides, right? So it's like this, you have to find a warband. And the reason why it works in this deck is because it's always be charging mostly. So you don't care if you're a beast. You don't really consider objectives that much. So the movement can help you just get where you need to go. And I like that. But outside of Rivals, I think you might decide to move past it in the other 2 formats.
Right.
Next card is Natural Hunter. While this fighter's target is savage and or trapped, this fighter's attack actions have ensnare.
It's fine. I mean, it also has a +1 move on it, so it's like great speed with an upside. Sometimes you're getting ensnare. Ensnare's good. I mean, there's a lot of 2 dodge warbands out there in the game. They will be charging. You can stagger them. You can wound them. Trapped is really hard to set up in like 90% of warbands, so I don't really think about that one as much. I think it's a little too hard to make the best case scenario out of this card for it to be worth the effort.
Yeah, I mean, the way I'm going to look at it is this is just a +1 move card that happens to give you a bonus occasionally, right? And because your opponent can stag or become savage by getting a charge token or you dealing damage to them, it is, I guess, maybe controllable for the damage aspect of it at least, but yeah, this is +1 move with a potential ensnare that pops up occasionally. The last card we have is Stubborn to the Bone. Enemy warbands cannot push this fighter. In addition, while this fighter is savage, you can reroll 1 dice in this fighter's defense rolls.
That's a good card, man. That is Champion's Fortitude, because you're going to be Savage. That's Champion's Fortitude that can't be pushed. That's pretty baller. I mean, we talk about Darkwater Anchor and it's not being able to be pushed by enemies. And then on top of that, like, instead of having the minus one damage from range three, you get the reroll, and I think that's better. So as long as you are doing Savage mechanics, this card is awesome.
Yeah, it's super good. The way I see it is that I wouldn't take it if it was just enemy warbands cannot push the spider. I mean, that's still a very blanketing statement, right? Like, can't be driven back, can't do anything. But if I'm Savage, this card is nuts.
Yes, absolutely.
Because you park him. The thing is, like, you park this on an objective that your opponent's trying to get on. They can't push you off. And you can't hold it because it doesn't matter. You're a beast. So who cares? And then you just start swinging. Mm-hmm. Right? And they can't push you off because you're really tough and tanky, in theory. So I dig it. I dig it. Zach, what's your favorite upgrade?
Well, as an Exile Dead player, I'm going to go with Brutal Transformation. It's not only is it super interesting, my current favorite warband can really abuse this card. So, yeah, I'm going to go with that one.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Brutal Transformation.
Oh, yeah. It's a good one.
How about you, Iman? What's your...
It's a fun one.
Yeah, it is.
Gifted Ferocity, man. Plus one dice.
It's so good.
It's pretty good. Like, it's just... It's just dumb, silly, strong. Mm. And the card art looks pretty cool, too.
Yeah, it's the lurking... It's either lurking or festering Skaven with a bunch of extra arms. It's great.
Yeah, it's festering because he's got the sword in his tail.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Pretty cool. Yeah. Man, forearm Skaven. That's incredible. Cool. Well, I think that will cover the deck itself. Now I want to spend the last couple minutes of the episode talking about what we think about this deck as a whole. And then I want to talk about what warbands we think are going to be good fits for this, for Rivals and Nemesis, and what warbands we think will not be good fits. So, I've got a hard stop in about 8 minutes because I've got to go to a work meeting, but I want to see if we can jump through this pretty quickly. So, Zach, give me your holistic thoughts on the deck.
I think it's really well designed. I mean, if you compare this to previous Rivals decks, like, especially... Deadly Depths or some of the White Dwarfs decks just kind of felt like, here's some cards that are come out this season, or have come out or are going to come out, just put them in a Rivals deck. And, you know, like I said, oh, this one's aggro, this one's hold feature, like, there's a bit of a theme to it. This one feels so much more streamlined design, and it feels like a deck. It feels like a deck you might actually create within limitations. So I love it in that regard. The other thing I love about this, and this goes back to how plot cards work, it allows them to print really powerful effects. Some of the Savage cards, some of the Savage objectives, and some of the Savage like upgrades and ploys are really, really powerful, but they require you to take the Savage mechanic and only use that plot card. And as we get more plot cards in the game, and as we get like more Rivals deck that have plot cards, it's going to be really hard to mix and match the powerful cards, right? Because it's like, oh, I really want this card because it's a Savage mechanic, but like, maybe in Daring Delvers, there's a really powerful card that uses their exploration mechanic, and you can't use both because you can only have one plot card in your deck. So it allows them to design powerful cards that can't be mixed and matched in Championship while still being super interesting in Nemesis. And I think they've done a really good job at designing this deck. As for which warbands I think are really good with this... Obviously, like we said, I think we've said a bunch of times, smaller, more elite aggro. I think Rippas is going to be really good with this. I think Shadeborn might be, not be bad with this, just because you're four man and you do like being aggro. Any that are kind of like that just kind of want to be charging with four dudes or three dudes, I think you can make this deck work really, really well.
Yeah. Yeah, completely agree. And I wanted to jump back before you kind of jumped ahead a little bit. But the idea is that, like, this is a very cohesive deck. It works. It functions. And I'm excited that, like, as you mentioned, like, this could be something that a Championship player could build if all these cards were separated. Like, if this was a Hunger or Primacy, and you were like, I want to make a Hunger or Primacy deck. And you take all the cards that you think you can fit into one deck, and it to be semi-compatible, competitive, if not quite competitive, then this is what you would come out with. And I think this is awesome because this, A, this takes away that deck building hump, that scare, that challenge that newer players might have, but they can still experience the game in a fun way that's unique, and then hopefully gives them the confidence to say, okay, I can go to Nemesis. I already know how Savage works, but I don't like these cards. Let me switch them out for cards that are in my faction deck or vice versa. And then Championship, and then, of course, goes further and further, deeper and deeper. So, huge fan of this system. I like how all the cards are numbered 1 through 32 with the logo on it, so you know where the cards go and where mm-hmm. they live. So, while they are part of the larger Championship Universal pool, they're still their own compact rival deck, which I think is great. Going to the warbands, man, I think you're absolutely correct. Any aggressive warband with three or four fighters, I think works really well. Even if you have five fighters, I think it works. Because when you have five fighters, you tend to have a couple weaker fighters that can take damage. So just running through the list, Reavers, aggressive Spite Claws, Magors, Godsworn, Despoilers, Ravagers, Gnarl Spirit, Gore Chosen, Skittershanks, Clawpack, like just from Chaos, those are great. You want to jump into Death, I think Aggro Grimwatch can do it. Obviously, the Crimson Court. Cannon Reapers might enjoy it. Wraith Creepers, maybe. I think you're going to want to actually... And I'll take back the Gore Chosen, because I think this deck doesn't work well with large fighters.
It also doesn't... It also has so a lot of stuff that's only range 1, so factions like... Factions that are range 2 kind of aren't great with it.
Yeah. Yeah, and range 3, so... If you use that as a blanketing statement, like Exiled Dead, any honestly most Destruction Warbands except for Hawthorn Crushes, and you could take it with Molog in Rivals, but you just can't use some of the cards, which is fine. But you can get really aggressive with your Bat Squig and do some cool stuff with him. I've seen Bat Squig do a lot of crazy things. But in Nemesis, you can just pick and choose the ones that work for Molog, right? And then Order, of course, there's a bunch of range 1 aggressive warbands there, including Steelheart's Champions, Chosen Axes,
Wild Hunt,
Condemners, just to name a few. Yeah, Wild Hunt is a great one. So, yeah, this is super solid. I like it. I think there's a little bit of flavor here for everybody, and I'm excited to try this with Magor's Fiends. Like, that's my one goal, is how can I make Magor's Fiends work? Because technically, their rivals deck is not legal,
right?
So, I think this is a great replacement for them, Tooth and Claw. So if you do have one of the older warbands and you're like, oh, I wish I could play Rivals, but I can't. Hey, man, Tooth and Claw works for a lot of Season 1 warbands.
Agreed. Very much so. Yeah, better than... I guess we can say concisely better than most of the Rivals decks we've seen out of Dire Chasm, Harrow Deep, and Nethermaze. And we've still got one more to go through if you haven't watched our other episode going over Daring Delvers, which we recommend because it's a good episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Last question I have for you, Zach, before we close things out. Do you like Tooth and Claw better or Daring Delvers?
Personally, I like Daring Delvers because it's more flex, it's more hold, and that's really my style of play. But man, if I want to go aggro, Tooth and Claw and Nemesis is like... It's a cool way to do it. So it's only slightly behind for me, I would say.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to say it. I think more people will gravitate towards Tooth and Claw because it's an easier game plan to understand. I'm not saying that Daring Delvers is extremely complicated, but it does require more thought and nuance because of the way that the plot card interacts with the board. But, you know, I think both are fun and... this is the tip of the iceberg, man. If all decks are going to look like this moving forward, it's super exciting. So, any final thoughts, Zach, before we close out?
No, I think we talked this one through. I'm excited to talk about the next one, and hopefully you guys listen to it.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, thanks to for you for listening and you know, being a part of the Gnarlwood expansion release. It's a brand new season. We're super excited, and we're really hoping that our numbers can increase in our community. Because we know Underworld is such a beautiful and amazing game. And I really do believe, and we believe actually, that, you know, these Rivals decks can help new players get into the game. It's the perfect time to join because you just plug and play. You want to convert your friends. You want to convert your spouse, your partner. You know, maybe people who play Magic or maybe who just like board games. Introduce them to this and you're going to see a lot of conversions into the game. And hopefully our community grows. So that's all I'm going to say. Once again, thank you so much to our patron supporters. If you'd like to join our current patrons, you can do so at patreon.com/pathofglory. That's also where you can find all of our blog content, pathofglorypodcast.com. If you have any feedback, questions, or comments, we love to hear it. We love to talk about it, discuss it. You can let us know on Facebook, Twitter, or Discord. We have a Path to Glory Discord and then the Vassal Discord as well. And please rate and just subscribe to our podcast wherever you can. It just really helps spread the message and hopefully get new players into the game. And as always, thanks for wishling. Thanks for wishling. Jesus.
We're struggling.
As always, thanks. We're struggling. It's like middle of, like, I don't record in the middle of the workday, but we are here today. As always, thanks for listening. And we wish you the best of luck on your path to glory.